listening to Omnus Protocol. I am Charles, also known as Omnus, and returning to the show, Jacob from Xavier Protocols. Welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me back.
This is going to be a fun topic to discuss, and I felt like you were absolutely the right person to be on for this particular one.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
So let's dive in, because this has the potential to be a long episode. So the topic today is essentially stepping back and asking yourself, what is my win condition? What is the way that I'm going to win the game? What is my path to victory? Where am I gaining an advantage over my opponent? And I think on a core level, a lot of people think about this. And I'm going to make a couple of references to some other game systems, like, say, Magic the Gathering, right? Even if you're playing a control deck, right, and you got all your counter spells and your creature removal, and you're just destroying everything that your opponent does, you eventually still have to go, how am I going to win this game? Maybe your plan is to run them out of cards. Maybe you play a few big creatures later on once you've kind of crushed them and just use the creature to finish them off. Either way, you got to figure out what that win condition is. And I think these sort of questions have become really common in other games. Obviously, War Machine, you got to go, am I trying to win on scenario? Am I trying to win on time? Am I trying to assassinate my opponent's caster? And I think it's important for us playing Marvel Crisis Protocol to step back and ask ourselves, for this particular team, how am I going to win the game? Jacob, I know you've been doing this a lot, because obviously Wakanda Wave has been one of your focused lists at the moment. And I think it's probably fair to say that you plan to win the game based on the secure scenarios.
Absolutely, yeah. There's a very specific plan. That list was built in mind, and then I tried to build a roster around it. I'm still struggling with that, but it's very good at what it does.
Exactly, and I think to a certain extent, we're doing this almost subconsciously in some cases, but I think it's important to step back and go, am I better at this than other teams? Or that sort of question for yourself. So I guess the core question we're asking is how to win. But we've kind of broken it down into four categories of the paths that your team can take to win the game. Dazing and KOing characters is probably the easiest to recognize because everybody likes beating up other people's characters. Now, it in itself is kind of a win condition. I have had one game where I actually managed to daze every character that my opponent had, or KO every character that they had. But that is extremely rare. Dazing and KOing is still about gaining an advantage in the crisis, one way or another. But when we're talking about dazing and KOing characters, obviously Cabal is very strong at this. Not only do they have a lot of offensive output, they have a leadership that's focused towards dealing damage and getting more benefit out of dealing damage. And then they actually have a fair amount of rerolls built into their faction as well. They've got Dark Reign, MODOK's got rerolls, Killmonger generates his own rerolls. So in general, it's really easy for a Cabal team to be better at dazing and KOing characters than the opposing team. Would you say that's a fair assessment, Jacob?
Yeah, I think Cabal is with what we've got so far, it's the premier sort of, I'm going to erase that model from the table. That's what they do really well. Now, the skill comes in then turning that into victory points. So you're knowing which is your threat assessment, which of these models is the most important one for me to remove this turn. So if I daze that model, now it's not contesting this secure crisis, or I daze that model and it drops that extract that I can then pick up. So knowing exactly where you're going to be targeting those attacks, that's where the skill of that strategy really comes in.
I think that is an excellent point, because when I look back at my Cabal games, every time I lost a game with Cabal, it's because I got focused on dazing or KOing a character that I just wanted to remove from the table, but wasn't as instrumental to gaining a crisis advantage out of it, like targeting someone who's not holding an extract, or someone you're just like, oh, I want to get this character off the table because they're frustrated to deal with. And then you're like, I've removed them, but now I'm behind on the crisis. Crap.
Yeah, just KOing a character doesn't score you any victory points. So it's got to be something that by KOing that character, you're going to score victory points. It's now no longer contesting this secure, or now it's gone down and I've picked up that extract.
Exactly. But Cabal's not the only one who can do this, even though they're probably the most naturally inclined. But again, before we get into this too much, just because we're talking about an affiliation's core strengths doesn't mean that you can't round things out with your unaffiliated characters, right, Jacob? Like, this is something that almost any team could potentially do.
Absolutely, yeah. You've got a huge amount of scope to tailor your team to do play in any of the styles we're going to talk about, depending on who you choose outside of the team. What we're focusing on really is looking at, well, what are the things that are always true for the team? Who are the affiliated characters and what kind of abilities do they have? What kind of team tactics cards do they tend to bring with them? What's the leadership ability and what's that incentivizing you to do? So whilst you can play it anyway, we're looking at sort of the way you are gently being pushed by the design process in each of these affiliations.
Absolutely. And I think, as we were just saying with Cabal, I mean, if you're not going to incorporate KOing and dazing into part of your Cabal strategy, then your question should probably be, why is Cabal the team? Right? So who would you say of the current affiliations, who's not necessarily quite as good as Cabal, but is pretty close?
So one that's close to my heart, I think Wakanda can do a really good job if you want to go aggressively with them. You've got access to Killmonger in affiliation, who's a fantastic character at removing people from the game. Black Panther can have a huge amount of output if you decide that you're going to use Mantle of the Black Panther and turn on all those rerolls. He can do a lot of work. And you've got fantastic reroll support in Shuri, as well as Wakanda Forever, meaning you're getting extra attacks, potentially four extra attacks in the game, which is like two character activations worth of attacks. That can be a huge impact towards KOing or dazing people.
Absolutely. And I think the rerolls play a big part in that. Like, just because someone has a lot of damage dealing potential doesn't mean they're going to do it consistently enough, right? Because we're only talking, like, the average game lasts 3 to 5 turns or 3 to 5 rounds, right? Like, you can't, like, you have to have a certain amount of consistency. If dazing is going to be your advantage, when you go in for that sort of play, you need it to be somewhat reliable.
It's telling that you've got these two affiliations who both have a lot of access to rerolls. Wakanda has it built into their leadership. Cabal has team tactics cards that gives fantastic rerolls. It's got Zemo running around handing out reroll bubbles. So those teams who want to be doing it, they seem to be the ones with those tools to kind of smooth out their probability curves.
Exactly. And I'm going to use Asgard as kind of an example of a team that's not usually going to gain their advantage that way. They are a little bit durable, which is good, like when you look at their base characters, but the only rerolling that they have inherently is there really actually isn't any rerolling inherently in. They've got a few ways to like add additional successes and add additional dice, but I think Asgard at its core, if they were going to try to go for some sort of dazing and KOing strategy, they need to rely on unaffiliated characters to accent that, or key tactics cards to push them in that direction. They're at a core, they are not going to keep up with Wakanda or Cabal in the ability to daze key characters.
And that might come as a bit of a surprise, because you're thinking about characters like Thor and thinking, well, he can daze someone easily, or someone like Valkyrie who can put out a huge amount of damage. But they are very, very dice dependent. If you're thinking about, right, how am I going to try and win this game? You want to try and make your strategy as likely to happen as possible. And yes, you can put down Thor and Valkyrie and Hela and do a huge amount of damage in some games. But if you're talking about repeatability and reliability, Asgard hasn't got it to the same degree that Wakanda or Cabal has because of their access to rerolls.
Exactly. And even if we're just comparing MODOK to Thor, right? You've got two characters that are 5 threat. Thor has no inherent rerolls. He has a lot of, like, a lot of his additional strength is tied up in rolling wilds. And whereas MODOK has naturally built in reroll potential, where he's going to get extremely consistent, extremely quickly. And he's really tilted towards staying healthy. And so I think all of that plays into when you want that sort of advantage. That's not to say that Asgard is a bad faction in any way, but they're my primary faction at the moment. But this is just not the way that I kind of lean towards victory in most cases.
No, I think that's right.
So let's talk about a little less common, because obviously it's really easy to think about dazing and KOing characters, but that's a slightly lower priority in this game as compared to most games. In general, you're going to be looking at the Crisis. But let's break it down into two segments and go, of the two, Secure and Extract, there are certain affiliations that are good at handling one or the other, and maybe not necessarily both. And so in the case of Secure, we're talking about stuff like Serum, we're talking about Gamma Wave. This is specifically the stationary points. Now, when we're talking about having an advantage here, it's both your ability to control your opponent being on it and maintaining your presence through either movement or the ability to not let yourself be moved. So, Jacob, who do you think is the strongest at managing Secures?
Certainly for me, it's got to be Wakanda. You've got Black Panther with auto pushes on his attacks, Shuri with auto pushes on her attacks, Killmonger, who can just remove someone from a secure quite happily without breaking a sweat, really. So you can reliably control which of your opponent's characters you're allowing to be on the secures. And so you can try and dictate exactly where you're going to score points and where you're going to stop your opponent scoring points.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone... I'd be really hard-pressed to imagine an affiliation coming out at some point that's better at secures than Wakanda.
Now, you can take Black Panther and Shuri in other affiliations, but then what really tips it over the top is Wakanda Forever. So your last activation, you can go, okay, well, Black Panther's there, and he's going to push that person away, and Shuri's miles away, and she's going to push that person away, and suddenly that's two more secures that I wasn't controlling that I now control. So for me, that's what really tips it over the edge.
Agreed, totally. And when I think about secures, I think Avengers is probably the number two here, right? Where you've got even Captain America, their leader, he's got some ability to push and throw built into his attacks, mm-hmm. which helps him. He's got access to Black Panther as well as an affiliated character. He's got a lot of characters that can throw people off of the crisis, like Vision, like Thor, there's tons of that. And with the affiliation bonus, they're generally getting to do their throws for less overall power. Mm. And you combine all of that with, they have a lot of ability to stay on the crisis. You've got characters like Vision that cannot be pushed some of the time. You've got a stealthy character like Black Widow that can kind of like hang back on a secure and it's harder to target her. And then you've also got Avengers Assemble, which can be all about making some sudden move to either get someone back onto a secure that was pushed away or make an aggressive play at some point during the game where suddenly a character is moving further than you expected them to be able to, and they may be taking something from you on the defensive side that you didn't think they were in range to do. And so I think, just to summarize that, Avengers, not quite as good as Wakanda, but I think that can absolutely be an advantage of an Avengers team, is focusing on the secure.
Definitely, and especially with the meteors, the origin bombs secure, I think that one really plays to the Avengers' strengths, to the extent that I think that all Avengers rosters should be including that, because I just think they are by far the best affiliation for that particular secure crisis.
I absolutely agree. I think there's a lot of cases where Avengers, that may be the one that Avengers wants to lean on entirely. They feel significantly better at it than basically everyone else.
So someone that maybe doesn't come up as well is the Cabal. They're very good at attacking, but they don't have a lot of throws built in. MODOK's got one, and he does feature a lot, but he can only be in one place. And if you look at the rest of the affiliation, it's difficult to move those people off without KOing them. And then you're relying on dice. This comes back to what we're talking about. So if you don't have that consistency, then you want to be looking at throws or pushes to move people away from your secure.
Yeah, and within the affiliation, most of their throws don't even work on characters. Ultron's throw doesn't, MODOK's doesn't. They do have like Loki and MODOK that can walk people off of it, and that's helpful, but that's not nearly on the level that Avengers or Wakanda have access to.
Absolutely, yeah. So they're not bad. They're not a bad affiliation, but if you're saying, right, well, I'm going to take Cabal and I'm going to try and win by controlling secures, it's going to... You're going to win by dazing and KOing, not by pushing and throwing and advancing people off a bout or a MODOK. So that's the kind of the distinction we're making here. You might still win a game scoring all your points off secures, but the chances are that you've done it by dazing and KOing them rather than by that sort of soft control that we've just been talking about.
100%. 100% agreed. All right, so obviously we've been talking about secure. Let's also talk about extracts, because this is a different animal. It's still the crisis, but it's kind of an entirely different approach, where if you're going to gain an advantage via the extract, it's going to come down to how are you going to be controlling more of the extracts than your opponent? And so a good question would be, like, say, in cubes. Both sides are probably getting their own defensive cubes in most cases, but who's going to get the one in the middle? How are you going to get it? How are you going to get to it, and then stay safe and not just immediately get dazed? And all of that is going to have to play into your strategy. And so I've ended up finding that I found this ends up being a strength of Asgard. They have Hela, who can actually move across the board and take defensive extracts from people, and she's got an above average stat line to be defensive, right? She's got 6 base health on her healthy side. She's got defenses across the board. You got access to Odin's Blessing. And in addition, Asgard can actually be pretty good at building into a strategy to punish people for coming at their own defensive extracts. And so when you have Thor, who's really perfect for dropping people off, and Hela is another one that, you know, when you walk into her range and potentially set her up for double claim souls and that sort of thing, it can be really punishing to put someone in that sort of position where they're going to struggle to deal with your ability to cross the board and take their extract, and then you can't really do the same thing to them as well in a lot of cases. I think this puts Asgard a little ahead of the other affiliations, maybe not as distinctly as I think Wakanda has an advantage in Secure and Cabal has an advantage in Dazing and KOing, but I do think it is a significant strength of Asgard.
So if you're building an Asgardian roster, which are the two main extracts you're looking at for including as your, well, this is my first choice and this is my second choice?
I think the main two would be Star-Lord's Crisis, Evacuations, and the Thor Crisis Hammers. I think when you're wanting to gain an advantage via extracts, I think those are probably the two that you lean on. But I could also see teams trying to utilize Spider Infected and cubes could also be ones that you can generate a really specific advantage. And I suppose it is also worth mentioning that Asgard is the only team that can potentially score turn one with herbs, right? I still think that's very hard, but again, it still plays into their advantage that your opponent has to be ready to deal with your ability to do that. And the more things like that that they have to worry about, the harder their team selection will be.
Yep. Now, you've been focusing on the sort of the spread out multi-extracts. I think Cabal is very good at extracts for the exact opposite reason. If you're looking at single priority extracts, things like the Skrulls, things like Kree Power Core, things like the Wakandan Herb, they are very good at taking that away from an opponent. So if there is one thing that scores points and you've run up and you've managed to find the Skrull, Cabal is incredibly good at taking that away from you. They're not wonderful at keeping it, but they are really good at taking away what you've taken. So often it could be several times in a round that Skrull is bouncing backwards and forwards between you and your opponent. They're great at that. They also really like the Wakandan Herb because it leads to a slower game. It's maybe you're going to get that Asgardian Hela play and get Hela scoring that herb turn one, but a good Cabal player will see that coming and be able to deal with it. And Cabal is just going to slow you down and make the game slower so that their attrition can weigh more heavily as the game goes on. They'll be doing more damage, they'll be ahead on character activation count eventually, and you just won't have enough characters to be able to deal with them. So by choosing the correct extract with Cabal, that can be really powerful.
Absolutely. And I think you were kind of hinting at this, and so I just want to like throw it directly at the listeners. Mm-hmm. One of Cabal's strengths is their ability to punish you for trying to get an advantage via the extract. Like when you're moving your pieces closer to them, like if you're trying to come after someone's civilian that's on their side of the board and you're walking into their already really aggressive threat ranges, they are just better at punishing people for trying to get an advantage that way. So when you have that sort of inherent strength of being able to punish someone for those sort of maneuvers, that makes it harder for your opponent to win that way, which can then directly relate to you being able to gain an advantage in that route. Because, say, Ultron, he can actually move right across the board and pick up someone's defensive extracts, and he's not that big of an investment. And he's often the character that Cabal wants to have people attacking. He's got above average durability. This can absolutely
Age of Ultron as well. So
yeah, like it all kind of plays into their plan. And so I think this is a really key element of Cabal. And I think one that's often overlooked by players. I know Pat has been doing this a bit more, but I think in general, Cabal players have been very, very focused on the dazing and KOing, like utilizing that as your route to victory. But I think you should absolutely be looking at the extracts and how you can gain an advantage there, because not as many people are thinking about that.
And there's pretty much no bad extracts for them, unlike Wakanda, which has some really quite bad secures. They really don't like Origin Bombs, the Meteors one, and they're not wonderful on the Extremis consoles one either. But Cabal, pretty much every extract, hammers, they love hammers, extra power for fueling their attacks, that's fantastic. Evacuees, they've got some of the best power generation, so in terms of evacuating those evacuees and scoring those points that you can't then get back as an opponent by taking away that extract, they're great at that. Any of the cubes or the spider infected, they're really good at, again, taking those away from multiple characters. If you've got three characters that are all holding extracts, great, that's three targets I've got, fantastic.
I will say I think spider infected can sometimes backfire for Cabal, because a lot of time, because their core characters want to be making double attack actions, sometimes that movement from spider affected can, it can just inhibit them at times, especially if they've lost a character and now maybe MODOK has to pick up an extract or something like that. That's one that I still think can backfire. I still think they're strong at it, but you have to be more careful with that one.
I think I'd agree with that. I think if you have got the extracts, though, you're kind of ahead because you're scoring those victory points, but I totally understand what you're saying.
All right, well, let's talk about an affiliation who's not generally going to gain an advantage via extracts. And I think Avengers fits the bill here, right? I think the only characters that they have affiliated that can cross the board and take one of your opponent's extracts is Black Panther and Black Widow. Black Widow is generally not a good choice for this because she is almost certainly going to get dazed or KO'd right away for doing so. Yep. And Black Panther is solid, but with him being really your only option there and him being really good at so many different things, if you trap him into that role, I think that can backfire for Avengers. They also, with their lack of built-in rerolls and such with a lot of their characters, they're going to struggle to punish someone for, like, say, I was talking about with the Asgard play. Generally, I feel like moving Hela aggressively onto my opponent's extract, if I'm playing against Avengers, I'm almost certainly doing this, because their general ability to punish me for doing that is probably not enough to actually daze that character round one, and that plays right into my plan. A lot of time, if you then try to go that route with Avengers, they're going to deal a little bit of damage, and then that's probably just going to feed power to that character to make them even more efficient the following turn. And so Avengers can get trapped in lose-lose situations there. So I just don't think Avengers is going to be as strong at generating an advantage via extracts.
I think people might be surprised at that because of how a lot of people play Black Widow. Black Widow is a great sort of wide objective grabber, and you might find some people thinking, well, hang on, they've got this amazing, fast, defensible at range because of stealth character. She's one character, and if you focus on her, she does go down. So I can see why people might think that, but yeah, what you've described has very much been my experience too.
And I think part of it is you want to be able to benefit from the play either way. And I think Black Panther is a good example of this, where if you make an aggressive play with Black Panther and he goes over and he takes an extract in a vulnerable position, and if they go all out into him and daze him, dude, he is one of the best characters in the game to start his turn at like 7 power. Right? Like, he can make use of that power so effectively, and Black Widow just doesn't. Even if she's got 7, 8, 9, 10 power, her turn is still not that impressive. It's better if she gets to use, you know, tactics cards. And so when you think about the other affiliations that can really easily bring in more characters that can make these sort of assertive plays, like, even say in Cabal, right, we barely got into mention, like, Zemo and Ultron are both really solid characters to do this with, because they can both get there to that objective, and they have lots of great ways of utilizing their power. And that's just really easy, naturally fitting into their team. Yeah, it's just, Avengers just not quite as strong in this area.
So they just take a bit of time to get going, don't they? That's sort of that turn one, they just feel a little bit lethargic. Because yes, they're not getting the power generation of Cabal, and they're not getting discounts on their attacks.
Indeed, and I think it is something that they can still do at certain points in the game, and maybe that plays into our final category, where there are certainly moments where Avengers want to do that, and that is kind of the Avengers' strength. So let's move into our final category. This has been one that both Jake and I have had a little hard time figuring out exactly how we want to describe it, but let's say kind of an adaptive or a balanced approach. And I'm going to say right off the bat, I think this is Avengers' strength. Where,
okay, do you want to dig in a little bit? What do you mean by adaptive and balanced? What does that look like on the battlefield?
Exactly. So what I mean by adaptive is kind of like what we were just talking about, where Avengers is probably not going into the game trying to decide, I want to gain an advantage this way. But looking at the overall situation and figuring out where your opponent's weakness is. Like, for example, say we're talking about a Cabal team, and you can look right down at that team and go, okay, that team, they want to win this game via dazing my characters and getting an advantage via the extracts. So you recognize that their weakness is the secure category. Avengers, or any team that's trying to take an adaptive approach, they want to be able to blunt your opponent's advantage and then just be strong enough that they can get the advantage over their opponent's weaker area or weakest area. I think the best way to explain this is going, I'm going to build a team with solid synergies, kind of that doesn't try not to have a weakness in itself. And because say we're talking about dazing and KOing for a moment, right? If you deal 5 damage to a 6 stamina character, they're still up. They don't drop the point. They're still controlling the crisis. So that 5 damage, if you can just blunt them enough that the character lives through it, you don't have to absorb all of it. And I think that is one of the reasons why Avengers ends up being strong here, is they have just enough options, just enough versatility. Maybe versatile is the name of the category.
Yeah. So what kind of versatility do you see in Avengers?
So with Avengers, as we already said, they can plan to secure reasonably well. They have to kind of pick the right characters to do it. They're such a deep roster. And I think in a big part, this is why Avengers ends up being the more versatile, the more adaptive, the more balanced, is because they have such a good range of characters. And so they can build for just about any strength. And so they have a very strong ability to at least present a team that doesn't have a gaping weakness. And if you're a very thoughtful player and you can realize what your opponent's weakness is, I think Avengers are good at capitalizing on that. And that description that you had of Black Widow earlier, I think, plays into that really well. When you can recognize at a certain point where all of a sudden they're not going to be good at dealing with a particular extract, and suddenly Avengers is going to send Black Widow off to this weird random point, and they're like, crap, I didn't realize she could move that far, and I don't have a good way to go after her now, because if I send this 4-threat character after this 2-threat character, now I'm not going to be strong enough in this other area to continue my game plan. And so it's probably the hardest one to characterize, but also at the same time, probably the one that most people are actually building their teams for.
I think Cap's a huge part of it as well. His bodyguard for one power. That's just such a powerful thing to try and blunt whatever it is your opponent is trying to do. If they're trying to take away and extract from you, bodyguard it onto Cap. If they're trying to attack you and push you away from a secure objective, bodyguard it onto Cap. If they're trying to daze or KO a character, bodyguard it onto Cap. So I think he's the most important character to use well in that team, knowing where he needs to be to try and counteract whatever it is your opponent is trying to do.
Exactly. And it's like we're talking about his bodyguard ability. You have to recognize whether you're bodyguarding with the goal of stopping damage, or are you trying to absorb the status effect or the side effect of the attack, right? Sometimes you might bodyguard a Shuri attack just so the other character hasn't been moved yet. Maybe Cap hasn't activated and the other character has, and so that character is already locked under the point, and you're willing to let Cap get pushed off because he can still activate and move back to it. And that sort of thing plays into it really well. I think Cap's versatility is probably what helps push Avengers that direction.
Another team that has this kind of quality to it is the Asgardians, simply because they are all really solid characters. They can do a number of things each relatively well. I mean, you think of Hela sort of sitting back and throwing out steel souls, but you get her up close and she can be brutal with her big physical attacks.
Yeah, Asgard in particular, you look at each of their characters, and they both seem, like, all four of their main characters seem to fit into two of these slots really well, right? Like, Valkyrie, she's solid at dazing and KOing characters. She's also solid at helping you with secures because she's got a built-in throw that she can potentially do every turn. Thor is kind of the same way, right? He's naturally a solid damage dealing character. He needs a little bit of consistency, but he can also move up really aggressively and generate throws. And so he can be a multi-threat on the table. And then you've got characters like Hela, right? Just as we said, she can go over and help you with the extract situation, but she's also a very scary, punishing damage dealer that can help you defend points or help you, you know, take advantage of people's weaknesses. And then Loki is another. He's versatile across the board. He can be used in a lot of different ways, aggressively, defensively, and so it does play into that balanced, adaptive approach. If you want to play Asgardian that way, they feel like they absolutely can.
I think Loki, especially with his extra power cost bubble, I think that knowing, like with Avengers with Cap, knowing where to put Loki, what is your opponent trying to do, and how am I going to make it hard? Okay, yes, that character's got 6 power on it, but if Loki's standing near them, they can't do this superpower and that superpower. They have to choose one, or they have to get lucky with a strike, or it just makes the choices more difficult for them. So knowing where Loki should be in order to maximize the disruption to your opponent's plan is really key if you've decided to put him on the table.
Agreed. So, yeah, I guess to one more point on Loki, I think if you wanted to play Asgardian as that adaptive, balanced approach, I think Loki probably is the key element there, kind of in the way that we were talking about Cap is the key element for Avengers. I think Loki's ability to degrade your opponent's advantages is really important to that plan where you just want to find their weakness and go, well, once you're dealing with Loki, what ends up being their weakness? What can't they do anymore? And say when you're looking at a situation where suddenly Vision can't throw every turn without making attacks, say you're playing against Avengers, and suddenly his throw costs 2 instead of the 1 that it would normally would with Avengers, that can throw math out of sync for what people want to do. And so I think if...
Or you make him rely on synthesis, and then you're essentially staggering him. Which is great.
Yeah, which is perfect. Or maybe he wants to get up and he throws a character, but he also can't then move again to get onto a different crisis or something like that, or get back to safety. You're blunting their advantages. I will say, when we were trying to figure out which one would potentially be the weakest in this category, it was a little hard because I think almost every one of the affiliations can make a balanced approach, but I felt like Wakanda was probably the worst at this, where I found it was really conceptually difficult to build a truly balanced team with them because their characters can be very specialized. And it it seemed a little bit more difficult. Like, say, I think Shuri is probably the biggest example here, where she tilts her advantage so strongly in the secure direction. And yes, the rerolls help you with dazing and KOing characters, but I think Wakanda, just at its core, because of how focused and powerful their characters can be in really targeted areas, they struggle to build a team that is as well-rounded as some of the other teams.
I think I agree with you entirely. It's such a reactive game that any team you take, you're going to be reacting to what your opponent does. But it's about the mindset of when you're going in, what am I trying to do? I don't think you're often going to be taking a Wakandan team saying, right, my plan is to sit back, see what they do, and then try and react. I think that is not going to work out as well for you as going in with a direct game plan around secures. I think that is really where they excel.
And I think this is possibly why a lot of people have struggled with Wakanda, because I think in general, a lot of people have either approached this game very specifically with the balanced approach or very specifically with the dazing and KOing approach. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you have a general play group that's all building very balanced teams, I think Wakanda can be one of the more disadvantaged in that situation, where you don't, if you're not a player that's coming in with a very like specific plan and you're trying to play that adaptive game, that's just not a strong suit for Wakanda. Would you agree that, because this was not something that we had kind of expected to talk about, but I have noticed a lot of people feel Wakanda is underpowered or lower tier. Do you think those two things are tied into each other?
I think it's possibly one of the higher sort of flawed affiliations to play in terms of the amount of thinking and practice and repetitions you need to do in order to play it well. There's quite a lot of sort of pilot skill involved there. So I think there might be a bit of a hurdle that's required to overcome. But I think once you've got your head around it, once you've got into it a bit, I think they are incredibly powerful in the right crisis.
Exactly. And so with what we're talking about here, and examining your win condition, figuring out how are you going to win. I think if you come in with the average Wakanda team and you are not immediately focused on gaining an advantage via the secure, you are almost certainly going to be at a disadvantage in other areas. And you need to take advantage of that advantage. It's such a weird sentence to say. But I think that is going to be one of the key things that players should be looking at in their team design right now, is kind of reviewing and stepping back and not just thinking about your synergies and your overall design, but looking at your team and going, okay, I have this great team of characters. And man, shout out to Atomic Mass Games. That part of why it's become so difficult to design teams is because all of the characters are useful.
Yeah.
And I think where player skill is really going to shine is going to be that combination and figuring out how to create the best combination that gives you an advantage somewhere, maybe even two slight advantages, and not weakening yourself too much in the other areas. Do you have a good example of something from your team design experience that would apply to what we're talking about now?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this goes back to the conversation we had before about my reflections on the team I was building. But I went in when I was first building my roster with a really strong plan for secures with this Wakandan plan. And I realized after some play that, you know what, you only get to play that game half the time because you lose the priority role and then you're told you have to pick extracts sometimes. So you need to have a second string to your bow and thinking about, right, how can I build my roster so that I've got a backup plan? And maybe that means going with some Cabal because they're good at taking away the extracts from my opponents. Maybe that means going with Asgard so that I've got some plays that I've got in the bag ready to bring out to try and get me that advantage in the early game. Or maybe that's, I don't know, Avengers or Guardians. Or but it's about thinking, okay, so here's the way I want to win. What if that's been taken away from me because suddenly I'm playing Wakanda and I've been told we're playing Origin Bombs? It's going to be really hard for me. So I now need to have a way within my roster to accommodate that.
I absolutely agree. And it's something I obviously played Wakanda a lot at LVO. And so afterwards, when I was realizing how strong Wakanda was, I started thinking, if I'm going to play any other affiliation, I need to specifically be bringing things that blunts that advantage, right? Whether we're talking about Black Widow or Vision or Crossbones, anything to try to take away some of that advantage. And part of that is bringing characters that can throw the Wakandan people off points. You just can't let them stack up their characters on the Crisis and keep that advantage. And so that's where I think both of us kind of got into a situation where we started looking at how to gain advantages in extracts when we don't have control over it. And that was kind of the precursor to this whole discussion. And it just hit me. I think I was just talking with one of the listeners on Facebook, and I stepped back and like, I think I'm doing this subconsciously, but I really need to stop, look down at a roster and go, how is this roster or how is this team going to win? And I think that's a really important question to be asking, and why we're doing this episode in the first place. Because again, Atomic Mass Games made this really difficult because all the characters are valuable, right? Yeah. I haven't been able to knock even a single one out of potential play.
In some situation, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think some of these, though, lend themselves more naturally to a less experienced player. I think the Day's KO strategy is just an inherently easier one to grasp. The what do I need to do? How am I going to win? And how do I build my roster to try and achieve that? I think that's where a lot of us started when we started playing the game. We're going to go, great, how can I knock out the most people I possibly can? And I'm not saying that that's not, there's no skill in that. I just think that's the sort of the most intuitive and kind of broadest, because you can, knocking people out is nearly always good. It's just knowing which ones to knock out. And so that can help you with skewers, it can help you with extracts, and you can still be reactionary with who you're knocking out. So in my mind, that's kind of a great one if you're just coming to the game and you're a relatively new player. Going for some of these sort of more finesse, highly structured team builds, I think that's maybe a step or two up if you want to try and explore that area. Having said that, I've seen great success with people playing Cabal as well. So they're a great affiliation. I'm not saying you have to play in this more complicated way in order to win, but it's a really fun area that I've enjoyed exploring over the last few months.
For sure. And I think because this game did not come out with all of the affiliations at the same time, we do have a lot of people that have, they picked up the core set, they fell in love with a particular affiliation, like say Cabal, right? And suddenly you're like, oh, I'm loving MODOK, I'm loving Killmonger, all of this stuff is so good, I've got this Days and KO plan. And then if you try to switch affiliations and then you stick with the same plan, you're going to immediately feel like, eh, there's not as good, right? I'm going to go back to playing Cabal, because you can't just translate the same game plan to every other roster. You have to examine what is the game plan for that specific roster. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I was building into a specific team is like, oh, I need to figure out how am I going to deal with hammers when someone's doing this sort of thing. And I came up with this idea that Ultron can drop off Killmonger and put Killmonger in range to make attacks on anyone that has come up to pick up a hammer. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting. So naturally, I'm like, man, one blast from Ultron plus 3 to 4 attacks from Killmonger in a single round, there's almost no character that can live through that. Mm-hmm. And so then I started thinking about it. I'm like, so let's say I have to play against this. What would be my counter strategy? And suddenly a character that I barely ever play is the optimal choice, because Captain Marvel would love to be in that situation. Right? Like, yeah, she moves up there and suddenly like, oh, both of your characters make energy attacks, do they? And so if you were walking into that situation, this could be an exact example of how maybe an Avengers team can take a balanced approach, where most teams are not going to have someone that they could put and go pick up a hammer looking at Ultron and Killmonger on the other side of the table, right? Almost no character is going to get through that alive. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're trying to go for the Ultron plus Venom plan. Like, Venom does not want Killmonger attacking him. Not at all. But
and if you've got that hammer plan and the Avengers player is then playing the origin bombs, Captain Marvel's great on that. And she's, that's going to end well for them.
Exactly. And I think that's what makes this very interesting, where you have to step back and not think about characters in a vacuum and think about how they match up in specific situations. Like, you use Dr. Octopus in your 15-threat Wakanda team, whereas most of the time, myself included, he's one of the least played characters that I have. But he just ends up being perfect for that combination of threat values. You're like, well, I need another 3-threat character with some decent defenses that has access to a throw.
Yep.
He's Doc Ock it is.
Yeah, you should play more. right, one affiliation which has been conspicuous by their absence, and I know we don't have all the cards yet, but where do you see Guardians fitting in these four different categories we've just described?
That's a very difficult question to answer while we don't know what Ronan and Drax do, because I'm really hoping they have throws to kind of round out the team. Instinctively, I think the easy answer would be to say a balanced approach, right? Because they're going to have a very versatile roster, and they're going to be able to bring tactics cards that they don't have to use. But I'm going to say, I think they may be leaning towards a dazing and KOing team, similar to Cabal, where they're going to have a natural reroll ability. You look at, in general, the kind of characters they have, like Rocket and Gamora and Star-Lord, who are all kind of in that above average damage dealing area. And then I would say I'm leaning towards them. This is kind of weird because they're kind of leaning towards a Cabal-esque faction, because I also think they're potentially strong at extracts. Gamora can cross the table and pick one up. They have a lot of offensive ability. Their leader is a flyer, so drop-off is almost like a second affiliated card for them. And so they feel a touch more... they feel a little Cabal-esque to me at the moment. But is that kind of where you've landed with them?
Yeah, I think so. I think you've got some really high damage output with Gamora, who's kind of like Black Panther, but more skewed towards offense. She's definitely not as defensive. She can't take a beating like he can, but she can lay it out much better than Panther. And Panther is already pretty good at dealing damage. So I think she's going to, if you're going for the Daze KO, you're going to be maximizing Gamora is going to be part of your game plan.
They might end up being a flip of Cabal, where maybe Extract ends up being their strongest one, because they can use their rerolls defensively or offensively really well. And so I think they can play into that Extract plan of, I'm going to send someone over onto the other side of the table. My affiliation, like, because their tactics card is, my tactics card works on everyone. And so whereas you can't play Odin's Blessing on Black Panther, right? And you can't play Dark Reign to help out Thor. But in Guardians, their tactics card essentially works on Thor, or it works on Corvus Glaive and Proxima Midnight. Like, they are going to be able to utilize the unaffiliated characters a little bit differently than I think the other affiliations can. So it'll be interesting to see how all of that unravels here pretty soon.
There may be more archetypes that become apparent as we get more factions, and maybe there's going to be more ways to win that get introduced. We don't know what's in the pipeline, so this may be something we have to revisit and go, okay, well, there's this whole new strategy, this whole new paradigm of list that is winning in a different way. And I think we're going to talk about that in the bonus episode afterwards, about something that we kind of been workshopping together and are hoping is going to come to fruition.
Oh, absolutely. And I think what you were talking about there is really important, where you're going to see, like, even a tactics card could potentially throw this whole paradigm into its next evolution, right? Where you could have, if they just come out with a single tactics card that is something that anyone could take that generates one or two victory points, there might be a fifth category that's just like making use of this card, and that becomes its own win condition.
That card, and then you layer, you set the throne on top of that, and maybe there's a third tactics card, and maybe eventually you can, you know, not ignore, but it's not your primary win condition to go after extracts or secures. You're going to pick up the odd point here and there, and you're going to get another six victory points off tactics cards. Maybe that's going to be a thing in the future.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could just, I just want to come in and not lose in the Extract or Crisis game, and then I'm going to use this other avenue. And I suppose we could use Usurp the Throne as an example, where theoretically you could be playing Wakanda and just being like, I just need to maintain my advantage, or like maintain not having it at disadvantage, and then I just have to pull off Usurp the Throne, and then that's my win condition. And that's probably a reasonable plan. I don't think it's quite as good as their secure plan, but I think there will still be games you will fall back on that.
Yeah.
And so I think what the listeners should take away from this topic is these are some of the core inherent strengths that you should be looking at. And what I would say is, say, we'll use Cabal as an example here. You probably don't want to be starting a Cabal team and going, secure is my primary plan to victory. If you're doing that, that's probably a mistake. But it is fair to say, I'm building a strong Cabal team. I am going to focus on, you know, extracts and dazing and KOing, but I'm going to include some key characters in here to help me round out my weakness in the secure category. Maybe you're taking Vision as an example, someone who's more difficult to push off of points, but he still plays into your existing plans and he helps round out your concerns with the secure. And I think that's something that you want to be thinking about with your team. So we haven't really talked about how the unaffiliated characters end up affecting this, and that's probably its own episode in itself.
Just one I want to pick up on, just because you were talking about Cabal, is Shuri. Now, I think Shuri is fantastic in Cabal, but if you're going for a pure Daze KO strategy, I'm not sure you want to include her.
I agree.
Something we saw with the finalists in the online league. The Cabal player, he was, yeah, no Shuri. And there were a few people online who was like, heresy! Like, no, it's the game plan. He's going in, he's saying, I'm just going to kill all your guys. It's fine, that's how I'm going to win. So Shuri didn't fit with that game plan. Shuri does, however, fit in a Cabal roster really well, some great synergies, and she brings that extra support to try and make you better at a secure plan. So Shuri is great in Cabal, but you might still leave her out because you're going, that's not what I want to build this team to do.
Right, and I think this is a prime example that if you're going for the straight up, like, I'm going to win via KOing and dazing characters to get my advantage, Shuri doesn't fit that well into that because she creates a weakness in your link. She's the chink in the armor, right? She's the weakest link in the chain, where she has below average defenses for her threat value. She is a really middle of the road defensive character, and Wakanda pushes her up just enough that she's not too fragile, because you have the Wakanda leadership, you have access to vibranium shielding. That can be just enough to keep her from getting dazed too easily. And the problem is, if you're playing a daze and KO plan, you also don't want your characters getting dazed and KO'd just as much. And I find a lot of the time, if I'm facing against a Cabal player with Shuri, I almost always daze and KO her.
Yeah, and she's not, if your game plan is daze and KO, she just doesn't have that offensive output. That's the fundamental thing, I think, with her, is saying, right, by all means, put her in a Cabal list. But yeah, if you're planning to daze and KO, maybe look elsewhere.
Yes, I agree. I think you might look at her and go, yeah, she helps with that, but
I think that's why this is so important, because you might be in a situation where you're building a Cabal roster and going, look at these amazing synergies I've got with Shuri. It's fantastic. She's going to be so good. And then actually, the way you want to play the list means that all of those synergies don't matter, because there are better characters for the way you want to play it.
Yep, I totally agree. And I think, again, using Cabal as an example, like, say you end up playing into Hammers or something like that, and suddenly you have this 18 threat game, and what happens with Hammers is you end up with these two corridors that you fight in. And a lot of the time you like having MODOK and Red Skull together, right? Like, that's one side of your table. Now suddenly, if Shuri is the other side of this table, now you have six more points to play around with Shuri. And so if you have Red Skull and MODOK on one side, but then you have Shuri, Zemo, and another three-threat character, your game plan ends up being too fragile over there. And so I think that's where, if Shuri is going to be part of that plan, I think that's where you need to be playing, like, okay, this side of the table is going to be more of a secure management. And this is kind of an unintentional part of this episode, but now that I think about it, there may be sections of your team, like say the Red Skull MODOK side, might be Daze and KO focused. And then if you include Shuri, then suddenly that other side of the table needs to not be Daze and KO focused, but maybe it needs to be Secure focused, right? Where you're going, okay, well, now I'm going to bring Crossbones as my other character and maybe Valkyrie to round out that side of that team, where suddenly I'm going to have Crossbones be a character that's hard to push off of the point because he can walk right back to it. And Shuri is going to help me with defensive rerolls to keep the characters up, and she can push people off, and Valkyrie can make the aggressive play and move up and throw someone off of a crisis. And so you might end up with a team that has a Daze plan on one side and a Secure plan on the other. Something like that.
Yep. I think we're really digging into it now.
Yeah, honestly, that was not even something I thought about until we just hit it in the discussion, where you end up with too many teams, and that sort of examination, even on the mini team, is probably... it's probably an important one to be asking yourself. So, man, I really love this discussion, Jacob. I'm really eager to see what the listeners end up saying to this, and seeing how many people have already been doing this, and seeing how this evolves people's lists.
Yeah, no, it's been good.
All right. Well, Jacob's already kind of mentioned it. We have another team concept that we're going to be talking about in the bonus episode that's kind of tied into this and kind of not, but I don't usually shout out about my Patreon every episode, but I haven't done it in a while. So I do have a Patreon. It's $1 per episode. I release an extra episode every week, usually about 30 to 35 minutes, to give the Patreon backers just something a little bit extra. You know, I appreciate their support, and I want to be giving back additional things to the community for those who can support me. But I understand not everyone's in that financial spot, and that's totally fine. But it's a good way that we can all work together on continuing to create content for the community. But speaking of other people's content, you should absolutely be checking out Xavier Protocols. I'm finding I'm reading more and more consistently all of your articles.
that's good to hear. I encourage that kind of behavior.
I bet you do. I was just in a discussion talking about Wakanda with a listener and going, hey, why don't you just swing over to the Xavier Protocols blog and read his interview with the player who was doing Wakanda in the league. Just like read through how he was answering the questions, because I think it will give you some good insight about why Wakanda does what it does. And maybe at the very least, it can help you plan for it. But Jacob, again, thank you so much for coming on. I'm obviously a huge fan of your blog, and I'm always happy when you can come on the show.
I'm a huge fan of your podcast, and I enjoy listening to it every week.
I'm glad I'm able to have fantastic guests like yourself to help me dig into these topics, because I really, especially in this quarantine time period where we can't get as many games in, like the mental exercises are a big part of continuing to love this game.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, listeners. Well, I think I'm going to wrap up this episode. We got this Patreon episode to record. So dive in, take a look at your rosters, take a look at your teams, and see if you can come up with a win condition that is just too OP.